Liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, wir heißen euch herzlich willkommen zu unserem Novo College Podcast für und von Strahlentherapeuten. Grey Matter. Taucht mit uns ab in die Welt der Strahlentherapie und Radioonkologie. Unser heutiges Thema lautet Flash, Zukunft der Strahlentherapie oder nur eine wiederkehrende Modeerscheinung? Darüber sprechen Prof. Dr. Britta Singer-Sörensen und Dr. Gabriel Adrian in unserer ersten englischsprachigen internationalen Folge Grey Matter mit Olaf Wittenstein.
Hello everyone and welcome to our first international episode of our podcast Grey Matter. Today we are talking about FLASH. FLASH radiotherapy is a technology which could have a great impact in our world of radiation oncology. And for the discussion today, I would love to introduce my two guests. First is Professor Britta Singer-Sørensen from Aarhus in Denmark, who is working at a particle therapy center as a radiation biologist. Hello, Britta.
Hi.
Nice to hear. Second, it's Dr. Gabriel Adrian. He's a physician in Lund in Sweden. Hello, Gabriel.
Hello, very nice to be here.
Yeah, thank to both of you. I met these both guys at the Lausanne FLASH Symposium in September 2022, where the topic was clinical translation of FLASH therapy. So this would be like the topic for today. But first of all, I would like to start with Britta. Britta, where are you actually? And what was the last thing you did just before the podcast record?
I'm at Aarhus University Hospital, and I'm both at the oncology department at the Danish Center for Particle Therapy. And actually, the last thing I did before we started the recording was to prepare for our this evening's FLASH experiment in mice. So I just took a few hours off from that to be here.
Okay. Yeah, I have to tell a little story, because you told me the last time we spoke that you have the experiments with FLASH always overnight, because over day the proton center is used for treating patients.
Yes. So we can only change the machine into FLASH mode when there's no patient treatment. So we are waiting until the patient are done. Patient time is over. And yesterday that was 7 o'clock. Sometimes it's 8 o'clock. And then we have a time gap until 11 o'clock where we can do FLASH treatment on mice.
Okay. So it's like working in the night or in the late evening.
It is. Yes, is it very much.
Is it every day that you have FLASH treatments?
No. Typically, we have a time schedule for FLASH treatment every second month, and then we treat 40, 80 mice, and then we do follow-up for the next month and a half, and then we do the next set of FLASH experiments.
Yeah, thank you. Gabriel, what was the last thing you did just before the record?
So I've been having a day for research today. I've been working in the clinic for 2 weeks. So I had some catch-up to do, and have been planning a course that we will give in a week in the next month for PhD students here at the university.
And you're working with an electron FLASH in Lund. And
yes.
Is it like the same with Britta? You can only use it in late evening, or is it free for research all day?
Yeah, currently we're really lucky because we can use it all day. When we started this 4 or 5 years ago, it was also just in the evenings. But last year, we have it's only been the FLASH research group that has been using that particular LINAC.
And you are a clinician, so a physician working with patients and doing some research. From your point of view, what would you say is the definition of FLASH?
So first of all, the FLASH, that's this really interesting new way of giving radiotherapy. And the definition of FLASH that is related to the dose rate, so the time it takes to give a certain dose. And typically for in conventional dose rate, what we usually give patient, it lasts for some minutes. When it comes to FLASH or ultra high dose rate, which perhaps is a better name for it, we have dose rates at least above 40 gray per second, often. Where we work, it's like between 200 and 600 gray per second. So the whole irradiation lasts just a fraction of a second. So the definition of FLASH, it relates to the dose rate.
Okay. Just personal question. Did you ever like took care of the dose rate before you came into contact with FLASH?
You mean in the clinic? We usually do not pay that much attention to it. We do have, when it comes to brachytherapy, low dose rate brachytherapy and high dose rate. And also with modern Linux, you can give this FFF treatment, flattening-free filter treatment, where the dose rate is increased, not near any flash dose rates, but still it's higher than in conventional dose rates. So the term dose rate is sometimes used, but we haven't really used any like benefits from altering the dose rates before.
But you said with the definitions or specifications, it's like that the dose rate above 40 gray per second is defined as flash, but most studies use higher dose rates. You said this is like 500, 600 gray per second. These high dose rates, of course, lead to shorter treatment times, but the biology effects of flash, and now I'm just turning to Britta, are exactly, so what is a flash effect, and does it correlate with the treatment time or with the dose rate? What can you tell us about this?
Well, the flash effect is a phenomenon which was refound in around 2014 by Marie-Catherine Bosnan and her colleagues, where they observed that if they irradiated with these increased dose rate in the range that Gabriel talked about, then they observed that they could see a normal tissue sparing effect. So less normal tissue damage was observed using the same doses as with conventional dose rates, whereas the tumor seemed to react in the same way as with conventional dose rate. So a normal tissue sparing effect and no sparing effect in the tumor. So kind of a win-win scenario. That was a quite big news back then, but that was technically very challenging to deliver these ultra-high dose rates. So it's been like in the recent years, more and more groups have been able to also do their own flash research. And now it's been demonstrated in a number of different models, number of different animals, and using both electrons, X-rays, protons, and carbon ions, that you can see this flash effect with ultra-high dose rate.
Okay, two questions to this. First of all, do you know why they tried these high dose rates?
I think that, as I heard Marie-Catherine tell it, they wanted to test it as a modality because this would be a really good way for moving organs. If you could deliver your treatment with ultra high dose rate, the treatment would take less than half a second, and moving organs would be less of a problem than it is in conventional radiotherapy. That's at least how I heard it.
Yeah, I can just add something there, that it was a topic also 60 years ago. So in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there are quite a number of publications. It wasn't termed flash back then, or ultra high dose rate. And there are several indications back then that there was some different biology appearing when we radiate that these really high dose rates. And then it appears that it's in the 90s, it just no one cared about it anymore, and I don't really know why people didn't continue with the research, but as Britta said, in 2014 it was revived.
Okay, and now we have like a proton flash, an electron flash, a carbon ion flash. Is the flash effect the same for each of these different types of radiation? Or is it different?
We assume it's the same. So we see a flash effect with the different modalities. We have for technical reasons, it's a bit difficult to compare the dose rates between, especially when we're talking scanning beam proton flash. The way to define the dose rate is different than from electron flash, where you give one big field instantaneously. So how to compare the different parameters is quite a big topic right now. But we assume that biology-wise, it's the same thing we are looking at. But we need some systematic studies comparing with the same models between electron flash and proton flash to actually be able to say this, whether it's the same magnitude of flash effect we are looking at.
Okay. For proton flash, what about the Bragg peak? Because usually for proton, Bragg peak is like a great benefit. And do you use it in flash additionally, or do you have a problem with a Bragg peak?
Yeah, a problem with the BRCA peak. That's actually the case right now. So most studies so far have not used the BRCA peak. We're using a transition flash. So we're placing the target in the entrance of the proton beam and not taking advantage of the BRCA peak at all. And this is due to how you deliver the BRCA peak, that if you need to do a spread out BRCA peak, then you will increase the time it takes to deliver the dose. So for that reason, people are using transition flash, and then you need to place the BRCA peak somewhere, and that's then done on the other side of the target. But that means that you potentially, if you would use this for a clinical situation, you would irradiate much more normal tissue than you would for normal proton radiation. But more and more studies right now are working on how to do flash with a spread out BRCA peak. And we just started that actually here. That's what we're doing this week. We're doing mouse studies with spread out BRCA peak proton flash with using a ripple filter to create a spread out BRCA peak with increased dose rate.
Okay, wow. Fascinating. Gabriel, what is it with electron flash? Do you still use most of the time one field technique, or do you change to two or more fields for radiation?
I think that's a really interesting question that we will probably discuss more today, because the way we use it currently is the one beam, one field, one irradiation. To be able to compete with the state of the art photon irradiation, I think more beam angles and especially fractionation is really a key topic to do research on, because single field irradiation with electrons, the clinical use of that is perhaps for superficial skin lesions, but to treat other tumors within the body, we need something else.
Like to come up to the conformality we know from IMRT or SBRT.
Exactly, both conformality and also the whole idea of fractionation.
Okay, so I think we have these two topics, fractionation and conformality or multi-field radiation. Then I think we can start with fractionation. The most studies use 12 or 14 or 20 gray in the single fraction for flash, and try to compare the single fraction flash with a single fraction conventional radiation therapy. Do you know about studies which come over to multi-fraction settings? Or do you perform multi-fraction settings in your own studies?
Well, it's been one publication by Marie-Catherine's group where they have tested hyperfractionation and in mouse brains and demonstrated that with some fractionated scenarios, they can see a flash effect and others they cannot. So it's pointing towards that it is possible to see a flash effect in a fractionated scenario, but the exact differences or the exact parameters, I think, are still to be enlightened in systematic studies here.
And we also have one publication with fractionated flash. So we would three fractionated and hypofractionated, looking at the tumor response. And we found then similar responses for conventional and flash irradiation for the tumor response.
Do you both think that fractionated flash could be better than single fraction flash? Or is it just that we need fractionated flash to compare it to conventional radiation therapy?
Well, I agree with what Adrian said, or Gabriel said before, that this is one of the really, really crucial topics right now on whether you could. But I would rather fear the other way around, that you would lose the flash effect when you divide, when you give it fractionated, because you're giving smaller doses. Data is pointing towards that you need to exceed a certain dose to see a flash effect. So maybe the first 8-10 gray is a build-up dose, and the flash effect will only be in the dose that exceed that. And if that's the case, then breaking it up to smaller portions or smaller fractions will maybe mean that we see less flash effect when we're doing fractionated. But I think we need to see the data here. But I think that's it's one of the crucial points for clinical implementation. I'm not a clinician, but I don't think most clinicians would be very happy. You can tell, like Gabriel, I'm very happy to start deliver something with a flash effect where we don't know the exact gain and then deliver it in a single fraction. I think that could cause quite some worry.
Yes, I totally agree. I think the fractionation question is really, really interesting and important. Especially, let's say the flash effect, we haven't mentioned any magnitude, but the magnitude is perhaps between 10 and 50%. But even if it's 50% sparing, so if you give a single dose of 30 gray, it still means that, yes, okay, you can, it that would be comparable to 20 gray conventional. Still, that's not what we usually do. So to compare it to curative treatment where we give perhaps 78 gray or 68 gray in 34 fractions, where the fractionation spares the normal tissue and the conformality spares the normal tissue, to believe that one single dose of flash, even if we have a 50% sparing, to that to become superior to the what we currently do, I think it's hard to imagine that that single dose fraction flash for deep-seated tumors will be actually better. But if we can fractionate, maybe we don't need 34 fractions, but maybe 10 fractions of flash with the good conformality, I think it could definitely have, in some cases, superior to what we usually do. And as you said, Britta, the data is not there yet. Is there a threshold? Do we need to go above 8-10 gray to trigger this flash effect? We don't know because there hasn't been that much studies. There are some single dose fractions below 10 gray where we don't see the flash effect, but we don't know. Like in your very nice study with the mammaria, with a mice model, where you had the same tumor efficacy for a conventional and flash, you had doses up to 60 gray. And that's what we need to cure the tumor in that case. So if we do fractionated therapy where the total dose is comparable to 60 gray in a single fraction, it might be that the flash effect is still there.
Yeah, but I want to just what you said, Gabriel, that actually I think it could be extremely interesting to see in preclinical data if we can find this dose threshold. But the problem here is that we don't have assays where we need that low dose for most assays for single fraction at least. We need much higher dose to see any radiation response. Otherwise, we have to do it fractionated. And when we do it fractionated, we're already mixing more biological issues. So it's hard to tell what's really what. So I think that's one of the reasons that this has not really been resolved yet, if there is a threshold dose to what is needed for the flash effect.
Yeah, and this threshold dose, is it like explaining, because you were talking before like about losing the flash effect when we fractionate? Because like if you're just doing the two small doses, the flash effect will be gone.
And we don't really know that, but that's one of the assumptions, that if you break the dose down in two small fractions or smaller fractions, then you would see a less flash effect. But we need data on this to show that, the preclinical data. And there's not been a lot of fractionated data. Gabriel was talking about one of their studies, and that's a study from Marie-Catherine. But fractionated animal studies are really difficult to do, logistically difficult. A lot of these beams are a little bit unreliable because we're in a very experimental setting. And I think that's some of the reasons why the fractionated studies have not been done yet. But I hope they will come in the next years.
Okay. Then again, Britta, fractionation, I speak again about fractionation and like portions of delivering within a fraction. Once more, technically, if we do single fraction flash and like having this high dose rate, is like the radiation just applied as like one portion, or it's like one fraction applied of a few portions just in just part of a second, so it's still one fraction. So is there a difference? How do you just supply the dose?
So I think this is, as Gabriel also referred to here, that the question is whether you're delivering the dose as a single field or as multiple fields, where then in the overlap of the fields you would have some tissue that received the total dose, but in smaller portions with pauses, because it takes some time to change the field. And that's something that has not been a worry before, but now where the timing seemed to be a fundamental key to what we're looking at, then putting in pulses and delivering the total dose could affect or influence a flash effect. And we've done some studies here in our mouse model, very simplified to what's done clinically, but just applying the dose either in one go or applying 2 minute pulses into the total dose. And what we see is that if we put one pulse in, then we already see a compromise of the flash effect, and two or more pulses in the total dose, then we completely lose the flash effect. But this will, of course, only apply to the normal tissue where you have overlapping fields. So it's not the entire field that where you see this.
Yeah. So, but it, just for a clinician's point of view, it's very interesting because usually if you say just the time, like the LINAC or what else we would have as a radiation system, is the time which makes us, as when it has to change or just turn around the patient, will make us lose the flash effect.
Yeah, because to see the fast flash effect, we probably have to deliver the treatment in less than half a second. That's when we're using the ultra high dose rates. That's around what we're looking at. So anything that disturbs this very short time frame will most likely influence the flash effect.
Okay, Gabriel, you had a publication in 2020 about the flash effect depending on oxygen concentration. So to add another just variable factor into the calculation of flash effect, what does it show? What do you mean, or how is the flash effect affected by the oxygen concentration in the tissue?
Yes. This we haven't touched upon at all. What the flash effect? Why there is a flash effect? The underlying mechanisms, and I think the short answer is that no one still really knows. There has been several different suggestions, and one of them being oxygen. It was also in the first wave of ultra-high dose rate irradiations in the 60s to the 80s. Oxygen was also discussed then. At that, in the old data, there are some publications showing that the oxygen concentration really affected the response, and other publications could not replicate the findings. And when it comes to oxygen, the hypothesis was now, because I don't perhaps believe that that's the whole effect for the flash. But so the idea then was that the oxygen was depleted, so consumed during the irradiation. And when you irradiate at these ultra high dose rates, the depletion of oxygen is much faster than the diffusion of oxygen in the tissues. So thereby the tissues becomes more hypoxic, and hypoxic cells or tissues being more radio resistant. So that was why there would be a sparing effect. And then the initial concentration of oxygen would then affect the possibility of triggering this flash effect. If you're totally hypoxic, anoxic, you cannot, the cells or the tissue will not become more hypoxic because there is no oxygen to deplete, whereas tissues somewhere in between, in this the range called physoxia by some authors, there's a range of oxygen concentrations where the depletion would lead to a more hypoxic phenotype. So that was a hypothesis, and in that study you referred to, we tried in vitro for a cancer cell line, irradiating the samples at different oxygen concentrations. And what we found was that in normal cells, the 21% oxygen, which by the way is never present within in a living tissue, is really much higher, 21%, than we ever have in the body. So at 21%, we could not see any differences between flash and conventional. But when the cells were made hypoxic in an hypoxia chamber, we actually saw a difference that the flash, at a certain dose, the flash did not kill as many cells. So that being said, then that oxygen somehow relates to the responses. But later work by our group and by other groups as well has made this more complicated, and we can see a flash effect. And by flash effect, I mean a less efficient sterilization of the cells also for, in normoxia for some cell lines. And in normoxia, it's not possible physically to deplete the oxygen, so the, we will not cause any hypoxia. So probably oxygen is somehow involved in the flash effect, but perhaps not oxygen depletion, more an oxygen dependence, where oxygen is involved in several different steps for different parts of the biology in the cells. And moreover, radiation chemistry, which I don't really understand at all, seemed to be really complicated. And in hypoxic cells, there are different dose rate dependent reactions where the radical-radical interactions, when they, the steps in these reactions are then dependent on the dose rate and oxygen is involved. So there might be a role for oxygen when it comes to radical-radical interactions. So I believe that in the coming years, we will know much more about this and perhaps try, perhaps pinpointing what's really causing this flash effect. And when I say flash effect, it's also important to keep in mind that the flash effect means a differential response between the normal tissue and the cancer tissue, because the normal tissue is spared, so we get less toxic effect in the normal tissue, but the tumors, at least in the available data, react in the same way. So this differential effect, the widening of the therapeutic window, and how that relates to the oxygen, it's a matter of discussion.
Yeah. Brita, do you have any ideas of experiments with mice where you can try to emulate like different oxygen pressures?
It is actually in our pipeline. We would very much like to reproduce a little bit in vivo what Gabriel has been doing in vitro. I think when your in vitro data came, Gabriel, actually it was very enlightening, because it has been one of the wonderments in the flash area is why can we do flash experiments in vitro and see no flash effect, and then we do flash experiments in vivo and we see a flash effect. And then your data demonstrated that this was probably an oxygen concentration issue, and that you could see a flash effect in vitro if you, for the right cell line, use the right oxygen concentration. But we would like very much like to simulate this in vivo, and that can be done by clamping tissue. Then you decrease oxygen concentration, and you can also increase the oxygen concentration by letting the animals breathe a higher oxygen concentration. So the different ways of modulating the oxygen concentration in the tissue, and then see how that influences the flash effect. And we have very big interest to do that, because I think, as Gabriel also said, it may not be that oxygen depletion is the whole explanation, but at least it seems like oxygen is playing a role and has an important role to play in the flash effect. And how that is all influencing each other is really still to be resolved.
I totally agree. And maybe it's some depletion to some extent and oxygen dependence and radical-radical interaction. Maybe it's not one single mode of mechanism. Maybe there are several interrelated.
And then the effects still seem to be larger in vivo than what you see in vitro. So still seem to be more an in vivo effect, even if you modulate. So we still have this thought that maybe there is also an immune component. Maybe there are some tissue-specific components that are playing a role, because it seemed to be more an in vivo thing than an in vitro thing.
Yeah, well, interesting. Yeah.
And especially that this differential response, that the normal tissue respond in one way and the tumor in another way, I think that's the most exciting part about flash, and that's why it's clinically relevant. And you, in your study, Britta, that's really nice. You see this TCD50 curve where there is perhaps a 4% difference, but it's non-significant, but still maybe a small difference. But for the normal tissue, it's huge. And that's not what to see that widening of the therapeutic window, we need to go to in vivo models. It's really hard to do comparable studies in vitro, where we look at normal tissue and tumor at the same time.
Okay, so you're talking about in vivo models, and now I have a question to you again, Gabriel. What do you think about clinical studies? So is there possibility to do actually flash now in clinical studies, or do you think it's too early and kind of what we know about the flash effect and the circumstances?
I think both yes and no. There are clinical studies been done and published, and there are others recruiting now. I think it depends on what you do. When it comes to treating superficial tumors with single field irradiation, where you would have done pretty much the same with conventional treatment, that's a good opportunity to do clinical trials. And that's also what they are doing, I think, in at some centers at least, direct comparisons. Then for treating for in deep-seated tumors in the curative setting, I don't think we have the machines to actually deliver a flash beam, or we're not there yet technically. So I think the answer to your question would be that under certain circumstances, certain conditions, we could absolutely think or plan for clinical trials.
Yeah, I found something about the FASTER1 trial, which was about flash radiotherapy for the treatment of symptomatic bone metastasis. And just for the listeners, so in the protocol, they tell us they used like fixed field sizes from 7.5 to 7.5 centimeters up to 7.5 to 20 centimeters. And of course, a single fraction of 8 gray, which is used typically in the clinic for painful bone metastasis too. And so this was like a one field study. So this is like then the FASTER2 trial. And so just again, to you, Gabriel, do you know about another study? Like concrete, because like with bone metastasis, well, we can imagine like to do it like with one field radiation. You mentioned like skin cancers.
Yes. Yeah, I just searched the clinical trials online to see, to search for flash studies in the clinic. And there's one called IMPULSE, which is a dose escalation trial for also skin cancers. I think it's melanoma. And another one that was registered just yesterday was called the LANS study, which is a randomized phase 2 trial for squamous cell carcinoma and basal cell carcinoma of the skin, then with direct comparisons randomized between conventional and flash. And depending on the size of the tumor, they will give either one fraction or fractionated therapies in both arms of the trial.
So we have these trials, which are like orientated in the clinic for where the tumor is, so that is like superficial. Brita with mice, like it was about mammary cancer, it was about lung cancer, some trials. Do we know anything about the different tumor types have like different amount of flash effect? Because like if we're thinking about radiation biology, we have like the alpha beta, which is like different fractionation is different in different tumors. So do we know anything about just the type of the tumor in flash?
Well, I actually think that the amount of tumor data is one of the Achilles heel in the whole flash field. I think we are assuming we will never see a flash effect in tumors based on quite few data sets and quite few models, whereas most of them are experimental subcutaneous models. And I think a lot of the factors we know are influencing radiation sensitivity in the clinic. How would they influence the flash effect? So I think in my point of view, some more studies, and also, as I think Gabriel pointed out, most of the endpoints used in the tumor studies are tumor growth delay and not tumor control, which would be the clinically most relevant endpoint. And the biology is quite different between these two endpoints. So I think in my optic, more studies and more systematic studies using a range of different tumor models, using tumor control as endpoint, And studying all these factors that we know from the clinic is influence radiosensitivity to ensure exactly as you're saying, do we see a different response to flash in different tumor models? Because we don't know that. We're simply assuming that we will never see a differential effect in the tumor response between flash and conventional. That's an assumption.
I totally agree with you, Britta. That's an assumption. And in the clinic, we know that you mentioned alpha beta ratios, Olaf, and alpha beta ratios differ between tumors. And for some tumors, we need to fractionate. We give treatment during 8 weeks. For others, we can give hypofractionated or ultra hypofractionated treatments, just 5-7 fractions, and cure the tumor, because we know that that tumor type usually has a low alpha beta value. And I would be quite surprised if there will never be a flash bearing in certain tumor types.
Me too.
Okay. If you both could have a wish list to the other one, so like Britta asking the clinician and Gabriel asking Britta as a radiation biologist, what would be the next thing the other like should study about, should make some research and tell you so you can go on with your own research? Maybe Britta first, because you're already like starting.
Well, I think from the preclinical side, we would like from the clinical side a wish list. So, what kind of data would you need before you would feel safe to start up clinical trials on flash? What kind of preclinical data could we supply you that would make you think we're ready to go? Let's put this into clinical implementation.
So, Gabriel, what do you want to know to start with, like a clinical implementation?
The first thing we have already touched upon, and that's the fractionation, to see what happens when we fractionate and how when we come to really high doses. I think that's one main question. And then on a wish list, a predictive marker for a flash response, that's on a wish list, that we can take a tumor, send it to the pathologist and say, hey, will this respond to the flash? We don't have that for, once again, the alpha beta. We can never measure the alpha beta ratio for a certain tumor just by sending a sample to the pathologist. But still, we know how to use it. And on an average level for a certain tumor type, we can say that it usually has low alpha beta or high alpha beta. So maybe we don't need a specific marker for individual patients to say this will be beneficial for flash. But still, on a group level, that this kind of tumor, so this histology or this oxygen level or this, I don't know what, will be here, we will have a beneficial flash response. I think that would be really, really nice.
But now you said oxygen level, and that just made me think we have not even really discussed that here. But we know from the clinic that tumors have very varying oxygen levels, and we already discussed that. Flash is maybe dependent on oxygen concentrations. So we may face a scenario where we need to select tumors based on their hypoxic status. And we have biomarkers for that. But we, of course, need to know that these are the right biomarkers. But that could be implemented and simply select. And then whether it would be the most hypoxic or the least hypoxic, I think is actually still open for interpretation. But that you could select in the range which one you would think would benefit from flash therapy.
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, for me it all sounds like that flash is still very experimental, but a very interesting field. And I was just like in between thinking, maybe we don't know exactly what a flash will be in the end, but maybe on the way to go there, we will learn a lot of just radiation biology for maybe even for normal radiation. Yeah, very interesting. About the wish list, I just like have to repeat, because at the Zand meeting in September, we had at the end like a wish list from the whole crowd. And it was like, we need a study which examines deep-seated tumors with a curative flash dose in a fractionated setting with a toxicity endpoint. This is a very direct wish list for a clinical study, which all we had just discussed before. when do you think a study like this could be possible? So just what is your opinion about the future of Flash?
I really think there's a future for Flash because it's so interesting, and it really reflects some radiobiology that we can use if we know how to use it. So I definitely think there's a bright future for Flash. When it comes to this question that was raised in Lausanne, what we are waiting for to treat deep treated tumors is probably Linux or machines to actually deliver a conformal dose to deep-seated tumors. We haven't discussed that in detail, but the conformality in state-of-the-art treatments with rotational arcs and IMRT, that's really, really a good way of sparing normal tissue, increasing the therapeutic window. So we have to have comparable dose plans for Flash in the deep-seated situation to actually have a superior treatment in the end. And that will probably take more than 1 year before that's available.
I have a question again to this. Couldn't it be possible that like Flash therapy could be better or more normal tissue sparing than our IMRT or ARC therapy with conventional radiation therapy without the need of so much fields of this conformality? So could it be that in the end, like, we use Flash just with a simpler technique?
That would be a complete guess, because we don't know the magnitude of the Flash effect in all the different tissue types. We know it in very few experimental models, but really, to answer that question, you would need to know for all the different implemented tissue types the exact magnitude of the Flash effect. How much sparing are we looking at?
But I think maybe there's a role for combining Flash and conventional. Maybe you start the treatment with one high dose of Flash, and maybe we don't need that perfect conformality. We can give a dose bath to all the nodes in the neck or the breast, or I don't know, whatever. But I mean, maybe we can give like one big Flash dose where we trigger the dose, it's high enough. The conformality is not perfect, but still we get the dose where we want it. And then we give the usual treatment afterwards.
Interesting idea too. I'm sorry for the questions. I know it's just very speculative, and this is like, it's not for use in the clinic, but I was just like interested what just comes to your mind, like when we're going to the edge of what we can do right now or what we cannot do right now. Okay. So just for the timeline, we're almost coming to an end to the podcast. Like one more thing to Britta, again for tonight, for your experiments. What do you want to find out, and when do you think you know what you have found out with the experiments today? So just like a timeline of your work, how long does it take?
Well, the experiments today, we are looking at the Flash effect in a spread out BRCP proton Flash. And we're comparing that with previous data we had, where we have data from animals irradiated in the entrance of the proton beam. And we would very much like to see whether we see the same magnitude of Flash effect. The thing with moving into the spread out BRCP is now we also have the RBE effect playing in. And the RBE effect and the Flash effect are actually pulling two opposite directions. And the RBE effect in the middle of a spread-up rack peak is not very high, but we still want to see how that is influencing the Flash effect. And we will know the acute effects we know within 30 days after our experiment. So for the first 40 mice, we know that in 30 days. And then we're following the mice for up to a year after radiation and monitoring the late effects. And this is fibrosis in our model. So within a year, we know the impact on the fibrosis also.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Gabriel, any last words?
I think it's really interesting. And in our continuous work here, we will focus in the preclinical studies on the tumor response to investigate the Flash response, to have nice quantifiable data to really to do what you did with that, to have really good accuracy in saying, this is almost comparable, this is as good as conventional treatments for this tumor, perhaps not for this one, and then trying to figure out when and why do we see a flash barrier.
Okay. Thanks to both of you. Thanks for the discussion. I wish you all the luck for the next studies and trials and what you're going to do and what you will find out about the flash effect. And maybe we will talk again in like 1 year or 2 years or meet again sometime. But yeah, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're both welcome.
Das war Grey Matter, der Novo College Podcast von und für Strahlentherapeuten. Alle Novo College Podcast Folgen findet ihr auf unserer Novo College Website. Und habt ihr einmal Fragen oder möchtet eine Anmerkung mit uns teilen? Dann schreibt uns gerne eine E-Mail an info@novocollege.de. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Wir freuen uns auf euch.